This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 222 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. One of the things I mention all the time on this show is that my takes usually live in the gray area. I'm very rarely a black and white thinker. That upsets some people because they feel as though I'm not taking a stand because I can't handle backlash or something. But it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with variance and wanting to be right. Predicting football is hard. Predicting which players will be worthwhile fantasy football selections, predicting which players you should prioritize off the waiver wire, predicting anything football and fantasy football related is difficult. So why would I think only at the extremes? Why would I disregard the fact that I'm not in control? Anything is possible in this game and in this game about a game. Ignoring that means I'm just trying to get some clicks for my hot takes. And that's not what I'm about. I want to look at things logically. I want to be processed and not look back on something and say, man, I was such an idiot for thinking that way. And I think this is something that's really amplified during the NFL draft process. There have been a lot of studies done showing that the draft is largely random. It's very difficult to consistently win at the draft. And that naturally means it's going to be very difficult to consistently get a ton of things right year in and year out. So when I say I'm not really into a prospect, yeah, that means that I'm probably not going to go heavily after that guy in rookie drafts. But that absolutely doesn't mean that I see no path for that player to be successful at the NFL level. Now, if you were with me last week, I did an episode on running backs from this year's class who produced like NFL studs in college. The study that I did and the podcast episode that I did on that study was to look at trends. I compared the college production profiles of successful fantasy football running backs to profiles of backs in this year's draft class. And the overarching trend was that it's very rare for a successful fantasy running back to have had bad college production, or even just below average college production. Generally speaking, good running backs in the NFL were also good in college. And the same holds true at wide receiver. Some players may break the mold and become something special after not doing a whole lot in college, but it's not a common thing to happen whatsoever. So like the running back study, I did one on wide receivers, and you can read it on numberfire.com if you want to. It's titled, Which Draft Hopeful Wide Receivers Produced Like Studs in College? But today I'm going to walk through that study and provide some additional context to it. And I'll end the show with some wide receivers I'm higher on based on projected draft slot and what my model is saying. So like I said, the goal of this study is to take a sample of successful fantasy wide receivers and compare their final season college numbers to the 48 wide receivers who were invited to this year's combine. But finding that sample of successful wide receivers isn't that simple. The way you define success is probably different than the way that I would. But honestly, finding that definition isn't the biggest deal in the world. The way that you measure success will be different than the way that I do, and we'll get different players in our sample as a result of that. But there's going to be a lot of overlap too. Like, we're still going to have Antonio Brown and Julio Jones and Odell Beckham in our successful NFL wide receiver sample. And remember, we're just trying to find trends. It's okay if we're not exact. We're not trying to completely remove players from our consideration set because they don't hit specific metrics. Anyway, the way that I defined success in this study was that a successful wide receiver is one who's had multiple seasons with 14 or more PPR points per game with a minimum of 10 games played since 2011. The reason I chose 14 PPR points per game was because that generally is where the top 20 wide receiver cutoff is in a given season. And if a player has done that twice over the last 8 years, that means he's provided multiple top 20 seasons. So he's been pretty successful. Doing that gave me a sample of 26 wide receivers who weren't super old and who also played wide receiver in college. I'm going to call this group the NFL studs group. This is the group that I'll be comparing this year's class to. Now, I wouldn't have done this study if we didn't see trends in college production data. The stud NFL group was better than this year's combine group in every imaginable statistic. For example, during the stud sample's final collegiate season, the average reception share was about 32%. Or each individual player in the sample on average accounted for 32% of his team's receptions during his final season. The sample for this year's draft class was at 23%. The percentage of receiving yards or receiving yard share was 9% higher in the stud sample. And the percentage of receiving touchdowns or touchdown share was almost 14% higher. Within those three main categories, and those are the main ones I'm going to talk through today, the players who have been successful in fantasy football at the NFL level far outperform players from this year's class. But that doesn't mean that every single player from this year's class is doomed. Obviously, there are going to be a lot of really good prospects and some not so good ones. Not every player invited to the combine is set to be successful in the NFL or even get drafted. So the way I approach this study is similar to how I approach the running back one. I looked at the main market share categories and I called out which players in our NFL Combine sample had concerns, or which players had market share percentages that really didn't come close to the NFL stud averages. The reason for doing this isn't to say that those players will automatically bust. I need to be clear about that. Because remember, we're working in the gray area here. It's just to say that they may be riskier prospects. That if they really end up hitting and joining that elite fantasy tier, they're sort of outliers. Let's kick things off by looking at reception share, or the percentage of receptions seen by one of these wide receivers in their respective offenses. I just refer to this as usage. Now, of the players in our NFL stud sample, the worst final season reception share was from Michael Crabtree, who had a 20.9% share. 15 of the 48 wideouts that are going to the combine didn't hit that mark. One of those players is DK Metcalf. A lot of people have him as the top wide receiver in this year's class. In 2018, Metcalf had just a 9.2% reception share, which is the second lowest among all wide receivers who were invited to the combine. But yes, context is needed. We need context with numbers like this, because Metcalf only played 7 games, so his numbers are going to be lower than if he had played a full season. But to be fair, guys, even if you were to double his reception share, you're still looking at a sub 20% mark. That's below Crabtree's final season number, and that's not a good thing. This is probably a good time to talk through the flaws of market share, though. The reason we use shares instead of raw numbers, especially in college, is because team offenses are going to be drastically different. Like last season, Army threw the ball 98 total times. Washington State threw it 677 times. It wouldn't make any sense to compare the raw numbers of a wide receiver from Army to one on Washington State. That's why we use market share. It gives everything team context. If a player is seeing a significant amount of yards or receptions or touchdowns in his offense, then that player is dominating within his offense. He's the dude. And if he's the dude, there's probably some talent there. Now, the obvious issue that we run into is the same thing that I talked about last week on the running back show with the Alabama running backs. If a player has a good teammate or a set of teammates stealing looks because they're also good, then that player's market share numbers are going to suffer. And that's what we run into with DK Metcalf. There are two other wide receivers from Ole Miss who were invited to the combine, in AJ Brown and DeMarcus Lodge. If they're invited to the combine, that means that they're pretty good. And if they're good, it means they were probably stealing looks away from Metcalf for a good reason. Context is always important. However, I don't think this means that we can or should just ignore how these players produced in college. We need to give this context some context as well. What if AJ Brown and DeMarcus Lodge are actually bad, and Metcalf was losing targets to bad players? Or why is it that Brown had the superior production profile? Was it because he was just flat out better than Metcalf? Or was it because the coverage on Metcalf was opening things up for Brown? Or was it because Brown has an additional year of playing under his belt? These aren't easy questions to answer. Film can't answer all of these questions. Neither can numbers. But this is why we're looking at trends and trying to spot concerns. Can DK Metcalf pan out and be an absolute stud at the NFL level despite his poor production? Of course he can. We're not here to think in absolutes. But are there red flags with Metcalf? Yes, and I'd argue there are more red flags with him than other top prospects in this year's class. Because we just don't see players with his production profile go on to do well in the NFL very often. The good news for Metcalf is that Brown is projected to be drafted high as well. Brown's production profile is pretty strong, and that combined with what could be a high draft slot makes him a really, really good prospect. And I actually prefer Brown to Metcalf because of all of that. But Metcalf's path to fantasy relevancy, or maybe relevancy isn't the right word, maybe eliteness, his path to being elite in fantasy football is probably Andre Johnson. Johnson wasn't in the study because he was one of the old guys who were omitted. But Johnson was a workout freak, which is what we're probably going to see from Metcalf this week at the combine. And Johnson's college production was pretty average too. He was really efficient, but he didn't do anything big in the market share department. And that's pretty damn similar to Metcalf. Metcalf's overall production marks are pretty average, but he was incredibly efficient. So the potential for Metcalf is there. A lot of the numbers-driven people are against Metcalf, and to be honest, I sort of went into the study thinking that I was going to feel that way as well. But his production profile isn't completely putrid. I do think that there are some concerns, but I can understand why people have him as the wide receiver one in this class. One guy I don't really get, though, is Riley Ridley. Ridley caught just 69 nice passes during his 3 years in college. Almost 70% of the stud sample had 69 or more catches in their final season alone. Georgia isn't exactly a pass-friendly offense, but that's why we're looking at market share. And Ridley's reception share was just 18% last year. And that's below that Michael Crabtree mark. There's really nothing analytically that's all that exciting about Ridley. He has below average market share numbers, and his breakout age is in just the 15th percentile as well. So landing spot is going to be massive for him. but I care a lot less about landing spot for wide receivers than I do at running back, because wide receivers need less overall help to really thrive. Elite talent can win in a larger variety of situations. So Ridley probably is not someone that I'm going to be drafting much in rookie drafts unless the combine is insane and he goes to a perfect spot. There are three wide receivers that I want to talk about within the receiving yard share category. Now, obviously, someone with usage concerns is probably going to have receiving yard related concerns. You can't accumulate yards without catching the football. But let me talk through three guys who were a little controversial in the article that I posted on NumberFire. One of them is Paris Campbell. Now, like Metcalf, Campbell has two other wide receiver teammates who will be at the combine this year. So the competition aspect of things will hurt his numbers a bit. But unlike Metcalf, there's no AJ Brown-like prospect that Campbell was competing with at Ohio State. According to DraftScout.com, Terry McLaurin and Johnny Dixon are both projected to go in round 5 at the earliest. So I guess the lack of production is a little bit more concerning. Campbell had just a 21.2% receiving yard share last season, when Crabtree was the only one in the NFL studs group to not get to 25%. And yes, Campbell doesn't project to be some traditional X receiver. He's sort of a Swiss Army knife type player. But we're comparing these players to fantasy football studs. And I think with a poor production profile, and as someone who may not get a ton of targets at the next level, we're going to want to see him land in a good spot more than some of these other guys. Now, Deebo Samuel is another wideout who a lot of people are into, but it's hard to ignore that he never hit 1,000 yards receiving in college, regardless of the injuries that he sustained. And that resulted in a sub-25% receiving yard share during his final season. The good news is that he's a really versatile wideout who was used on special teams, which is an added bonus and tells us that he's a good athlete. But Samuels is a slot guy. He projects to be a slot receiver. And with most slot receivers, I'm very concerned with where they land. I just noted that I care less about landing spot at wide receiver than running back, but slot guys are a little bit different just because there's less that they're able to do. There are fewer places for them to win. So while Samuel does have some concerns, he could end up being a higher floor fantasy asset if he falls to the right team. Maybe a team like Detroit, who could use a Golden Tate replacement. Or maybe Green Bay. Green Bay would be sweet for Samuel. I just don't necessarily see the ceiling with him, though. And then the third player I want to mention within the receiving yard share metric is Kelvin Harmon. Only player within our 26 wide receiver sample of studs that shares similar market share metrics across reception, receiving yards, and touchdown share is Doug Baldwin. Everyone else has better final year numbers within at least one category. Harmon does have a teammate in Jacoby Myers who's going to the combine, but as someone who's being projected as maybe even a potential first rounder, I'm not totally sold on Harmon. But to be honest, that's kind of how I feel about this wide receiver class when looking at their production. It's a really, really solid class, but it's a harder one to measure and find elite players from. And again, this is just looking at trends in production. For a lot of these guys to become year in and year out fantasy studs, they'll just need to be slight outliers. Not huge ones, just slight ones. And that's sort of how I feel about Kelvin Harmon or DK Metcalf or JJ Arcega-Whiteside or even AJ Brown. If they end up hitting, they're going to be in the lower college production tier among these successful NFL wide receivers. But the last category that I looked at in the study was touchdown share. Of the three market share categories, touchdown share saw the largest difference in the stud NFL wide receiver sample versus the combine invites from this year's class. And a lot of the same guys had concerns in the touchdown column that I already talked about. Riley Ridley's share wasn't amazing, Paris Campbell's was a little bit low, but I will say DK Metcalf wins in touchdown share, and that's a great sign. That's at least something. He had a higher touchdown share than DeMarcus Lodge's past year, despite playing just 7 games, and he only scored one fewer time than AJ Brown. And as a redshirt freshman in 2017, Metcalf's touchdown share was 25%. This is another reason that I'm not as scared about him as a prospect as I thought I would be. Now, given all this, you're probably wondering if there are any wide receivers in this year's class who matched up well with our NFL stud sample averages. And there were. There were two of them. Both players went to small schools, though, and we should always adjust for competition. One of them is Ashton Doolin, who went to a school called Malone University. He played against schools like Finley and Alderson Broaddus. I had to look up Alderson Broaddus just to make sure it was a real school. And I found out that the cool kids call it AB. So Ashton Doolin played against AB. He dominated in college, though. We should hope that's the case for a smaller school guy going to the combine, but he did. He had a 65% target share during his final year, which was one of the highest shares a combine invite has seen over the last decade and a half. He's got size, but I'm interested to see how he tests at the combine. It's really hard to go all in on a dude who played for Malone. Andy Isabella is the other player who fit the criteria. And unlike Doolin, Isabella is getting a good bit of love. He's supposed to absolutely crush the 40-yard dash this week, and there have been comps of Isabella to Brandon Cooks and T.Y. Hilton. I actually think that the Cooks comp is kind of interesting because Cooks had really good college production as a smaller speedster as well. But Cooks also had an elite breakout age. Isabella's is fine. It's better than average, but it's not on Cooks' level. Now, if I stretch the parameters out a little bit, two other notable wide receivers have final season numbers that match well within our NFL stud sample. Those two are Kareem Butler and N'Keal Harry. Let me start with Butler. A few weeks ago, I was running my prospect model, and I tweeted that Butler and Andy Isabella really came out looking nice within it, and that's still true. My fear with Butler is that he's 6'6", or he's listed that tall, and we don't have a sample of players being that tall and succeeding in the NFL. Since 2000, only 7 wide receivers at the combine have measured 6'6" or taller, and all of them sucked. Now, I don't think that means Butler is going to suck. I actually don't care all that much that no wide receiver that tall has succeeded, because our sample is really tiny. And there have been plenty of 6'5" wide receivers who have dominated. I just think it's kind of a red flag, as is the fact that he had a lower than average breakout age. So while I like Butler more than the consensus probably does, I do think there are plenty of concerns. But the one player who I think should be the consensus number one receiver in this class is N'Keal Harry. His final season numbers are awesome across the board. He had about a 30% reception share this past year, a 36% receiving yard share, and a 45% touchdown share. But he also has been doing this for multiple years. His sophomore season in 2017 was basically just as good as what we saw in 2018, and he was productive immediately as a freshman. So that gives him an unreal good production profile to go along with a really, really good breakout age. Now, I sent a tweet about Harry the other night that said, N'Keal Harry pretty much checks every box analytically. Tape grinders seem to love him too. Kind of surprised he's not easily the consensus wide receiver one. After sending that tweet, I did get some pushback from people because of DK Metcalf and other guys that people like. And that's fine. I didn't mean that everyone should have Harry as the best wideout in this class. Just that I would have thought that he would be the overall number one. And that's not clearly the case. The thing that people seem to not like about Harry is his separation and that he's a jump ball receiver. So I do think the combine will go a long way for Harry to prove his athleticism outside of that vertical. But a ton of people mentioned that he could be another Laquon Treadwell because of these issues. But Treadwell didn't have the same type of production profile that Harry has. During his final college season, Treadwell saw 26.5% of his team's yards, 26% of his team's receptions, and 31% of his team's touchdowns. And those numbers were a good bit lower during his first two college seasons. Just comparing final season numbers, Harry had a reception share that was 3% higher, a yard share that was 10% higher, and a touchdown share that was 14% higher. So I think the comparison might be interesting from a film perspective. It's not really there from a numbers-driven one. Harry is my wide receiver one, and I'll have AJ Brown as my wide receiver two entering the combine. And then I just sort of have a group of wideouts after that in Metcalf, Arcega Whiteside, and Harmon. And I really like Andy Isabella, and I cannot wait to see what he does with his 40-yard dash. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And like I've been saying, if you could, I'd really appreciate a rating and review on iTunes. It goes a long way to helping out this show. And I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. You can hit me up on there or email me at jj@numberfire.com with mailbag questions for this week's show. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you later in the week.